We're on Daf Lamed Beis, finishing up the sugya of the Nagar when someone comes into his carpentry and gets killed as a result of a flying spark. And if we assume that the Nagar in such a case, because he killed the Nichnas B'Shogeg, goes into Golus, the Gemara asks, this is just a few lines up, four lines up from the end of the Daf, Umi Chayav Golus. Does the Nagar have to go into Golus because he killed the Nichnas? For Asanya, we learned in the Braisa, HaNichnas L'chanuso Shel Napach V'nitiza Nitzotzos V'tofchalo Alponav Umes Potter V'afilu Nichnas Bishus. The Braisa is outspoken about the fact that if someone enters into the carpentry, the Napach, and he gets hit by one of the sparks of fire, and he's killed as a result, tragically, the Nagar is Patur, the Nafach in this case is Patur. You know, the Nafach is working with his bellows and sending out sparks. He killed someone B'Shogeg, he's Patur. He doesn't have to go into Golus. And that applies even in a case where the person who entered into his shop did so with permission. So there's an absolute rule that knows no exception, formulated by this Braisa, that the Nafach does not go into Golus. How do we reconcile that with the case in the Sefer that we learned yesterday, that the Nithnas Pershus case requires that the Nagar go into Golus? The Gemara answers, Hachamayas Kinan, this Braisa that exempts the Nafach from Golus is talking about a very specific case. Bishulya de Nafchai. There's an apprentice who is studying under the supervision of this Napach, this well-experienced long-term Napach, learning the trade. So the Gemara doesn't understand. So what? So Shulya de Nafchai lemiktalakai, is that a good reason to, in a sense, justify the fact that the Napach killed this person, the Shulya, this apprentice? I mean, just because he's working for him, or he's studying under his tutelage, therefore there's no Chiv Golus if this disciple gets killed? And the answer is Kishir Rabo Mishari Bolotzis. Let's say the end of the learning session terminated, and now the Nafach says to him, please evacuate. You know, I want to be alone here, I got work to do. Vieno Yotze. And the apprentice refuses to leave. And in that case, there's no Chiv Golus, because the permission for this Shulya de Nafchi to be in the Nafach's house, in the Nafach's shop, has now terminated. He should have gotten out of there. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, I don't understand. Okay, so the time is terminated, but he didn't go out. And if he didn't go out, he doesn't deserve to be killed. He's not a criminal. So why is the Nafach then alleviated of any responsibility if he kills him? He's a Hori B'Shogeg. He killed him, albeit unintentionally, but he has to go into Golus. The Gemara answers, Kesofer Yotza. The Nafach had every reason to assume that at this point, when he had begged him and told him it's time to leave, the session is over, that the Shulya de Nafchi indeed followed instructions, followed orders, and packed out. So in the mind of the Nafach, he's alone in the shop. In this case, he doesn't have to take, in his mind, he doesn't have to take any extra precautions about worrying about these sparks flying. He's an anus. And we said that in the case of Shogeg, as we discussed the great length yesterday, only chayev when there's an element of negligence that sizes up and is defined as Shogeg. Here, it's karov leonis. Yehochi achar nami, if you're going that far, and the Nafach pushed them out and said, time to leave, what does that have to do with Shulah de Nafche? The way you interpreted this braisa, Chamai Eskinim Shulah de Nafche, you implied that there's some sort of special halacha in Shulah de Nafche. The truth is that anyone who enters into the shop and now is asked to leave, and the Nafach has every right to assume that he obeyed his orders and he left, is that becomes Karov Leonis. Why did the braisa formulate this in terms of Shulya de Nafcha? And here we begin Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara answers, Acher Lesle Emosa de Rabbe. The fact that you asked your average client to leave the shop, you cannot rely on the fact that he leaves the shop and therefore starts sending out sparks, you know, flying in all directions in a very erratic and radical sort of way without taking the proper precautions. Because this person is a client of yours. His relationship is such that, okay, he doesn't have to obey orders immediately and strictly. However, but this disciple, this apprentice, who's called a shulya, islay a masa derabe. He knows that if he incurs the wrath and disobeys his master, he's going to be terminated. And therefore, he certainly will obey orders. If he didn't obey orders, don't hold the nafach responsible for assuming that he still might be lingering in the shop, and therefore imposing upon him extra responsibilities. No. He had every reason to believe, within the context of a masa derabe, that the apprentice already evacuated, he's left the premises. The Gemara now brings a third explanation of the statement of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rava Masile, he understood that the words of Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina related to the Aha, the Brisa in Masechta Makis on Daf Chesam and Aleph. There the Brisa is interpreting the Pasuk in Dvarim Yutes V'Nashal HaBarzel Min HaEitz U'Matzes Re'eu V'Meis. And what's the significance of U'Matza? U'Matza Prat L'Mamtzias Atzma. In other words, there's no Chiv Golus for a Horig B'Shogeg unless the Nerag, the victim, was there at the place, at the spot when this Ritzicha, when this Hariga took place. But if, let's say for example, the Rotzach threw a rock, and then after the rock was already in flight, somebody, unfortunately a victim, opened up a window and stuck his head out and got hit by the rock, in such a case, the Rotzach is Potter, he's not Chayv Golis, it's Karov, Lemezid, it's a Prat, Lemamtzias Atzma. We can Omer Rav Lozman Yaakov, Mishi Yotza Eved Mitachas Yodo, Bahotzi Alos Rosho Mekibla Potter. Once the stone, as we said before, was in flight, it left the arm of the thrower, who turns out to be the Horeg, and subsequently the Nirzach, the Nerag, pops his head out, and in quotation marks, catches the stone on his head. In such case, you're potter. Here's where Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina makes his comment, although, says Rabbi Yossi, he's potter migolus, because this is a case of Karov Leones, Chayov Biarvod Var. Nevertheless, if the victim was injured, we have here a case of Chovel B'Chavero. Again, as we've discussed at great length, Boshes is not an issue. We have to drop that from the list of five because Boshes requires Kavona Levayish, Kavona Lahasik. But here, as far as the other four is concerned, there's enough of a bare bones responsibility to be Mechayev the Zorek, right? The Zorek who threw this stone for under the law of Adam HaMazik, in this case, Chavol, Nezek, Tsar, Ripus, and Shevetz. And the reason for that is that although he's Karov Laonis, and therefore exempt from Golus, but nevertheless he is enough of a Poshea, he shouldn't have been throwing stones out there in a place where somebody might stick his head out, to be considered an Adam HaMazik, Adam Mu'ud Li'olam. As we've said on many occasions, Bein b'mezid, Bein b'shogeg, and even b'ones, Adam Muad li'olam. Now this point that I made, that there's a chiyuv, Adam HaMazik, and Chovel b'chaver fidal dvarim, because he should have anticipated the possibility at least that someone might stick his head out. He had no business throwing rocks around in a public area. This is supported, I think, by Tosfos, Divrei Maskil V'Hotzi. On the top of the page, he asks what Lechora looks like a contradiction to a sugya on Daf Chavav Mid Beis. A man sends a kli down from a roof
and it's going and meant to land on pillows, somebody comes along and removes the pillows, the Zorek, the one who threw it, is Potter. Why didn't he anticipate the possibility that someone might pull out the pillows and then the kli that he threw is going to smash into smithereens when it hits the ground? The answer is, you don't expect anyone to run and before the kli hits the ground, remove the karmic susos. As far as you're concerned, the Zorek, that was a safe kind of bet. But to throw stones, and Rosh Hashanah Rabban Tosa says, oh yeah, he's got to worry about the possibility, even if it's somewhat remote, that someone might get caught and hit by this stone. And therefore, he's chayev b'toras adam hamazik in this case, but not in the case where the premise was that the falling of the kli would be cushioned by karim uksusos. The Chazon Ish clarifies Tosfos a little bit further, and he says that removing the karim uksusos is a ruach she'eno mitsuya. That's an extremely improbable high velocity wind, not to be predicted. But here, when a person throws a stone, which is really a clear-cut, potentially Maisa Hezek, that's not to be considered when the person is victimized a Ruach She'eno Metsuya. Person pops his head out of the window. That's what people do. That's what windows are for. The Gemara now clarifies. Man demasne alaha kol shken hakamaisa. If you interpret Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina as reflecting on the Braisa, how much more so Akamaisa? In the case of Dalid Dvarim, if Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina tells us that Yochayev, because of the possibility that someone would pop his head out of the window, how much more so in the case of the Braisa that we studied on Lamed Beis, Amid Beis, in the case of someone who enters into the Nagar, to the shop of the carpenter, there for sure Rabbi Yossi would certainly state that he has to pay, the Nagar has to pay Dalid Dvarim, and the reason for that is because he actually saw him entering into the shop. He should have certainly been more careful about possibly hitting him with a piece of wood and killing him. However, if you interpret Rabbi Yossi Aglili as a comment on the Braisa of Nichnas Lechanushal Nagar, and there he's Chayav Dal Dvarim, but possibly in the case where he threw a stone and someone popped his head out, Potel Legamri might be Potel not only for Golus, but even for Dal Dvarim. Because then we can define the victim's popping his head out as something which, shall we say, exonerates the Zorek from any responsibilities, not only as far as Golus is concerned, but even as far as Nezikin. And again, here you could go two ways. Either the Gemara is positing the possibility that we should define the Hotzos, Rosho, the Mamsi Esatzmo as a Ruach Shein Metsuya, very low probabilities that would happen, or alternatively, which makes the Zorek into an Ones, or alternatively, the Gemara might be presenting a new principle, and that is that Mamsias Atzo means that he is responsible for whatever suffering and injuries he incurred, because he participated, he in itself situated his body, or in this case his head, in a location where he would be damaged. And maybe that puts him into the category of, if you will, a partnership, a contributor to this hezek. And you might even go as far as to say that he should have been careful when he opened the window before he popped his head out to make sure there's nothing flying in his direction. Tana Rabbana. We would like to study now a braisa that deals with the case of someone who enters into the reshus of his friend and he is injured. He is damaged. Tana Rabbanan Paulim Sheba'u Litvoa Schar Mibalabais. These are workers
who, when they finish their work, they come to claim their wages from the balabais, from he who hired them. Unigachan shorishol balabais. They were injured by a goring of the shor of the balabais. The shochan kalo shel balabais, or the dog owned by the balabais, bit them. Umesu. And in this case, there was a tragic end to this injury. It ended up in death. And the question now is, does the balabais have to pay tashlume kofar? We have halacha that if a man's animal kills a human being, under certain circumstances, we'll discuss soon, the owner of the animal has to pay what's called kofar. And according to the Tanakhama of this brisa, the balabais in this case does not have to pay kofar, because the palim entered into the rishus of the balabais without permission. That's the opinion of Tanakhama. Acherim omrim, an anonymous dissenting view is quoted in the sefer, Rashoim pol litvos harmi balabais, that as an absolute rule, when the day ends and the wages are due, the laborers have the right and permission legally to go into the balabais' rishus. They don't have to knock on the door and wait for the butler to open up for them. That is the accepted practice. And according to the logic that seems to be, shall we say, follow from the statement of these acherim, we should understand that in this case, the balabais should pay kofar. The Gemara asks, let's clarify the exact circumstance of the case. Echidame. Either shchiach b'masa, if on the one hand, matzui hu b'rechov ha'ir, my time of acherim, if the palim can find the balabais outside of the confines of his home, out there in the streets, and they could collect that check from him there, why do the acherim insist that the palim are allowed and permitted to enter into the house of the balabais? They could have equally achieved their goal and demanded their salary without having to enter into the confines and the private property of the balabais uninvited. But if, on the other hand, you can only find the balabais in his home, he's not to be found out there in the streets. My time in the Tanakhama, let's try to understand the Tanakhama. Why would he claim that they're not allowed to go into the house? After all, they have rights to demand payment. Do they not? That's a basic right of a laborer. So what we're looking for is some sort of middle of the ground case, a blurry, fuzzy, ambiguous case, which would engender a controversy between the Tanakhama and the Acherim. Lo tzricho, what's the case? Begavra d'shchiach v'lo shchiach. You can find him on occasion, this balabais, in the streets of the city. Maybe he's out there doing shopping. He's on his way to shul. But you know what? He's not generally there. You can find him more often in his home. V'kari abova. The Poland came to the gates, to the door of the home of the balabais. They knocked on the door. The Onolu Balabai said, in, yes. Now, what does he mean here when the Balabai says in, yes? Mar Sover, according to the Acherim, in, means ul, toshma. I say yes, you knocked on my door. Yes, come in. You have permission to enter. And therefore, the Balabai is chai for tashlum kofar in a case which tragically ended up in the death of the poet, because the shor of the kelev killed the poet. Umar Sobatanakamas of the opinion in, what did he mean when the Balabai said in? Kum aduchtech mashma, it meant to say, stand in where you are. In other words, yes, I'm coming. Coming to open the door for you. I'm not giving you any green light or license to enter into my home. That's a private place, off limits. And therefore, when they entered in, they had violated the lack of permission, meaning the negative response that they got from the balabais, and therefore the balabais is patur from golus. they are considered to be trespassers. They had no right to enter into his house. Kuma duchtech, stay there, and I will come out, and I will come out to see you. Now, it's very interesting. This Gemara understands and analyzes this machlokes between the Tanakam and Acherim as referring to a case of in, where the Baal Bais said came. He responded in the affirmative to the knocking on the door of the Poel. But yet, we also have to say that this person is Matsui, this Baal Bais can be found in the city. And if the person is frequently found in the city, not the case that we're describing where he's found in the city on occasion, but he's always found in his house. If he's found always in the city, then it would be a milsa of Pshita that when he said Cain, he did not mean to allow them to enter. He certainly meant Amod bim komcha, stay where you are, because, you know what, we can meet out in the city. If on the other hand, the other polar extreme, this person is never to be found in the city, he's only to be found in the house, then we have every reason to believe that when he said in, when he said Cain, he meant come into my house, because that's the only place that you could find me. And that's the sheet of Tosus here, Divra Maskel Begavra. The Mukayirosef, on the other hand, quoting the Ramah, wants to say that if the Baal Bais can be found in his house, and they knocked on his door, and he responded, Hain, then even if he meant Amod Bimkomcha, but since you could only find him in the house, the Poel's allowed to enter, because he has rights to enter into the house. That's the only way he can find the Baal Bais and collect his wages. And all this, says the Muki Yosef, is explained in the Gemara at the end of Bab Metzia. Tanya, the Gemara says, I have a Braisa Kimandi Omar in Kum Aduchtech Mashma, which means, as the Achirim understood it, come into the house. Yes, come in. This Sanya we learned in a Braisa. Poel shenichnas litvoa schoro mi Baal Bais unigocho shoro she Baal Bais and shocho kalbo potter af al pi shenichnas birshus. The Braisa records an opinion that even though the Poelim had rights to enter to the house of Baal Bais, the Baal Bais is potter. Says the Gemara, my potter, why should the Baal Bais be potter in this case if the Poel had rights to enter in? Elolav, but rather, what's the case? The Kari above of Yomalei in, the Poel is knocking on the door, and the Baal Bais responds, yes. And the Poel goes in and was killed by the Shor of the Baal Bais. Even in this case, the Baal Bais is potter shma mino in kum aduchtech mashma. That when he said in, he meant kum aduchtech, stay where you are, and I'll come out and greet you. And that would reflect the shita. If I said achem before, I stand corrected. What I meant was the shita, the Tanakama, that the Baal Bais is potter and the Poel had no right to enter, and that's the meaning of the word in. Even though we explained a little bit earlier that if a Baal Bais can be found in the city from time to time, although he's not always out in the streets, but he is there frequently, then we said before that in the name of Tosfos, that the Braisa is talking about a case where the Baal Bais can be found in the city occasionally. And in truth, if the Baal Bais is out there in the city on a very frequent level, then for sure the Poel has no rights to enter into the house. And here we have a kasha from Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. I don't know if we'll have a chance to go through the kasha inside. He says that the Braisa might be talking about a case where the Baal Bais can be found out in the streets, in the marketplaces. But since the Poel has the ability of finding the Baal Bais, if he so wants to, if he makes the effort to do so out in the streets, he shouldn't have gone in. And that's why the Baal Bais is potter. It could be very possible that if the Baal Bayis is out in the streets, shchiach v'lo shchiach, then if he said to the poel hein, what he meant was that you should come in. And the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz says that the Braisa, which says that he's potter even when he comes in Bershus, which sounds like we're talking about a case of Shchiach v'lo Shchiach, if the Baal Bayis was Motzi Be'ir, the pole has no Rishus to enter in, even if he stands at the entering, at the entrance of the house, calling out to the Baal Bayis, but since the Baal Bayis is Motzi Be'ir, then the implication of Kum, excuse me, of Hain, or Kain, is Amod B'mkomcha. If on the other hand you can only find the Baal Bayis in his house, then everybody would agree that when the Baal Bayis said Hein, he meant come and enter into the house. And in such a case the Baal Bayis would be chayav. In our case here it's shchiach v'lo shchiach, and therefore we don't know exactly how to interpret the Hein. So it comes out that in shchiach v'lo shchiach, what we're saying, Lamaskana, is that there's one Shita, and that's reflected by the Tanakhama, that Hain means stay where you are. Because you know what? It's Shchiach that I go out to the marketplace. However, in a case where he's very Shchiach in the marketplace, everybody would agree that when he said Hain, what he meant was stay where you are. And there was never a debate about that. That was clearly a case where he's Potter from Golus, because Hain meant Amod B'mkomcha. And now, Rabosai, we'd like to begin a somewhat complicated Mishnah here on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. And we're going to try to see if we can do our best in Mirz Hashem to simplify this Mishnah, because this Mishnah could be made very complicated. We're talking now about Chavolos between Shvarim. You know, imagine the case of a bullfight, but not the classical bullfight as we know it, where there's one human being, one matador in the arena with one bull. But let's take the case where we have like a match, a boxing match between two bulls, and you know, you shoot the gun, or you open the doors on the two sides, and the shvarim go at it one and another. And this is called, in the language of the Mishnah, Shnei Shvarim Shechavlu Zed Zed. Now, let's take the simple case where, as we said before, this is a match between two oxen. They both go at each other simultaneously. There's not like one started by attacking the other and the other just responded because of the law of self-preservation. No, we're talking about two Shvarim that go at it simultaneously. Now, there could be many possible permutations and scenarios. It could be that both of these oxen have absolutely no record of negicha, which means that two shvarim tamim, and that's the case that the Mishnah addresses in the Reisha. It could be that both of these shvarim have records, past records, of three negichos or more, and therefore they're both mu'adim, and that's the second case in the Mishnah. And then you could have finally a scenario where you have one shor, which is a tam, and the other shor is a muad. Obviously, this Mishnah is based on the premise that a shor tam pays chatzi nezek, whereas a shor muad pays nezek shalom. In the last part of the Mishnah, before we get to Rabbi Akiva, that's the end of this Mishnah, we have a case where there was a mutual attack between an Adam and a shor. Adam, in a sense, replaces shor muad, because Adam muad liolmi means he pays even on the first hezek nezek shalim. The shor might be one of two situations: either the scenario where the shor is a muad, and then we're basically like two muadim that went at each other, or the shor is a shor tam, and then it's like the case of a muad attacking a tam. When I say attacking, I don't mean that the muad took the initiative. I mean that the muad and the tam are at it, one against the other in this so-called bullfight. Now, another principle that we have to understand here is Hafuchi mitarti lomali. In other words, we don't have to say, if I was masik you and you were masik me, that I should pay up for you and you pay up for me. But rather we could do what they call here in Israel, kizuz, you know, just simply subtract the lower number from the higher number. So if Reuven damaged Shimon 100 and Shimon damaged Reuven 50, let Reuven pay the increment between 50 and 100, the difference, 50. And that's what the Mishnah says. Now, Shnei Shvarim Tamim, both Shvarim are equal, they're both Tamim, Shechavlu Zezeh, Mishalmim B'mosar Chatzi Nezek. What we do is, we figure out which Shar harmed which a greater harm, in other words, a more profound injury that he, the Hezek was greater. Let's say, we'll call it Shar A and Shar B. Shar A damage Shar B 100, Shar B damage Shar A only 50. The difference is 50. And the Shar Tam that damaged the larger sum has to pay half of that discrepancy, half of that increment. So you're subtracting 50 from 100, and then you'll end up with 50, which you divide by 2, because we're talking about a Shar Tam pays Chatzi Nezek. The second case is Shneim Muadim. That's even a simple calculation, because basically you just figure out what the Mosar is. Mishalvim Mosar Nezek Shalom. You pay exactly the amount that is that exceeds the lower Hezek. The lower Hezek, let's say, was 50. The higher Hezek was 100. So the owner of the Shar, who is Mazik 100, will pay 50, simply subtract 50 from 100. In the third case of the Mishnah, however, Echad Tam v'Echad Muad, and now the Mishnah subdivides this bullfight between two bulls, one is a Tam, one is a Muad, to two different subcategories, two different sub-scenarios. We have scenario number one, the Muad b'Tam, means the Muad harmed or damaged the Shar Tam a much greater value than the reciprocal and simultaneous hezek of the Tam and the Muad. So the Muad damaged the Tam 100. The Tam damaged the Muad only 50. The Mishnah says, Mishalim b'mosar nezek shalem. Now, I don't know how to interpret this Mishnah. I can give you the Rush, which is logically difficult, but literally and literarily more correct, if you will. Or I can give you the Dmukei Yosef, which is logically more appealing and more intuitive, but it's very difficult to push it into the language of the Mishnah. So I don't know which one you want first. But let's start with the Rush, and then we'll ask a question on the Rush. The Rush, I think, interprets this Mishnah the way it should be interpreted, just literally, straightforward. Mishalim b'mosar nezek shalim, which means mosar is we subtract one nezek from the other. Let's see how much the nezek was. And as we said before, the nezek that was initiated by the muad was 100. The nezek that was initiated by the tam was 50. B'mosar nezek shalim. Let the shar muad pay 50, which is the increment between the nezek that was generated by the Shar Tam and the nezek that was generated by he himself to Shar Muad. That's how the Rush interprets this. Notice the Rush is unwilling to say that let's take the 50, the hezek of the Shar Tam, and let's divide it into half. He only pays, after all, in Hilchos Tashlumin 25 out of the 50. Let's take that 25, subtract it from the 100 of the damage of the Shar Muad, because the Shar Muad pays Nezek Shalom, and we end up that the Shar Muad has to sign a check for 75, not for 50. No, says the Rush, that's not true. You can't read it into the Mishnah. And conceptually then, when we talk about the Nezek of the Muad vis-a-vis the Tam, that Nezek is anything beyond the Nezek of the Muad of the Tam into the Muad. Forget about Tashlumin now. The Rush is not interested in emphasizing Tashlumin. He's interested in trying to evaluate the Nezek. And the Nezek clearly is 50. Why? Because the Tam as a Mazik was Mazik 50. The Mu'ar as a Mazik was Mazik 100. Let's cancel the 50, and we're left with 50. And that's what the Baal Mu'ar has to pay, so says the Rosh. The Nebuki Yosef has a much more appealing, at least on a conceptual level, opinion. And he claims that we should be evaluating and subtracting based not on Nezikin, how much damage was incurred, by valuing the damage, that's not relevant. We want to discuss the Tashlumen. How much does each one have to pay? How much does the Baal Shar Tam have to pay? How much does the Baal Shar Mu'ad have to pay? In the case of the Mu'ad, he has to pay clearly 100. In the case of the Tam, he has to pay 25, because he only pays Chatzi Nezik. Let's subtract the 25 from the 100 and let the Mu'ad write out a check for 75. That's the shita of the Nemuke Yosef. So again, once you arrive at a certain sum, after you subtract X from Y, the owner of the Shar Mu'ad will pay Nezek Sholem on that sum. And then the Mishnah says, Tam B'Mu'ad, if the Tam damage the Mu'ad more than the Mu'ad damage the Tam, then after you do the subtraction, is Mishalim B'moser Chatzi Nezek, then the owner of the Tam will pay half a Nezek of whatever remains after the subtraction. The machlokas between the Rosh and the Nuki Yosef is, how do you set up that subtraction? Whereas the Rosh would say we subtract Nezek from Nezek, the Nuki Yosef would say we subtract Tashlumen from Tashlumen. Now we go on to the second part of the Mishnah, which is really the second half of the Mishnah, minus Rabbi Akiva at the end, and that is Shnei Anashim Shechovlu Bozez, which is an exact, if you say a mirror image, a replica of Shnei Shvarim Muadim, Sheziku Zetzeh, just like in the case of two Muadim, they each pay Nezek Sholem, so too, in the case of two Bnei Adam, two Adam HaMazik situations that each pay Nezek Sholem, we just simply subtract one Nezek from the other, and the one who's got the higher damage, he's the one who pays that difference. Then we have a case of Adam B'Mu'ad, or Mu'ad B'Adam, and once again this is a simple case because we're talking about two Mazikim, each which pay Nezek Sholem. So again, it's a simple subtraction, whether it's an Adam and a Shar Mu'ad or a Mu'ad B'Shar Adam, whoever incurred the greater harm and the greater damage will pay that difference. And then we have the more complicated case of Adam B'Tam and Tam B'Adam, whereas the Tam pays Chatzi Nezek, the Adam pays Nezek Sholem. So if the Adam B'Tam, meaning he incurred the greater value of damage, is Mishalim B'Moser Nezek Sholem, after we make this subtraction, whether it's the way the Rosh would have it or the way the Nemuki Yosef would have it, he pays Nezek Sholem on that differential, on that amount that supersedes the Nezek of the Tam. But Tam B'Adam, if the Tam exceeded in his damage that which the Adam was damaged the Tam, then Mishalim B'Mosar Chatzi Nezek, after you make the subtraction, again, Marek Yisrei, you pay Chatzi Nezek. Now we get to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Tam Shechovel B'Adam, you just had a case where the Tam was Chovel B'Adam, and you say he pays Chatzi Nezek. No, says Rabbi Akiva, Mishalim B'Mosar Nezek Sholem. He pays the full damage. There's no din of Shar Tam and Chatzi Nezek in the case of Chovel B'Adam. And the Gemara now explains the Machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Tanakam, Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham and Tanur Rabbanon, in terms of a drasha and how to interpret the Pasuk in Shmos Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. The Pasuk reads, O vein yigach, O bas yigach, kam mishpat hazeh yaseh lo. And that's Pasuk Lamed Aleph in the 21st chapter of Shmos. And we're going to be focusing in just 1 minute on Pasuk Lamed Beis, the very next Pasuk, which is the Pasuk of Shar HaMu'ad. But here we're talking about a Shar Tam. and the pasuk says Kamishpat Hazeh Yasalo, and we don't know exactly what that means. Do we go Adaliel or Adala Kamon? Meaning, according to the Tanakhama, Kamishpat Shar Bishar, just like in the case. Now, this case is Okiika Oben Yigachobas, means the Shar attacked a human being, and Kamishpat Hazeh Yasalo indicates that the Chachamim, that the payment regulation is equivalent to that of a shor that attacked a shor, which means that just like if a shor attacked a shor on the first occasions, he pays chatzin nezek, ma shor b'shor tamish on the chatzin nezek, and only when he becomes a muad does he pay nezek shalom. Af shor b'adam, that's the case here in the pasuk of Oben Yigas Kemishpat Hazeh, means like the mishpat of shor b'shor that came before. In the parish of Tam, is Tam Shalom Chatzin Nezek, Umuad Mishalim Nezek Sholem, and therefore the Chachamim have a universal halach of Shor Tam to pay Chatzin Nezek, where the Shor Tam damaged another Shor, where the Shor Tam damaged another. But Rabbi Kiva Omer, Kemishvat Hazeh goes on the next Pasuk, and that's called Kitachton. Tachton means the very next Pasuk, which is there in that context, which is the case of a shor muad that pays nezek shalom, lo kamishpat ha'elyon, not the case of shor tam, which pays chatzin nezek. And therefore, basically, according to Rabbi Akiva, the Torah is now circumscribing this din of tamus, of chatzin nezek, and saying that only applies when a shor attacks a shor. But in a case where a shor attacks a human being, he pays, like a shor muad, nezek shalom. Yachal, I might think, according to Rabbi Akiva, mishalim in aliyah. Are we saying, therefore, that the din of tam and the shame tam, as far as tashlum and nezikin, is completely paka, completely mufka? It's excluded in Gansin in the case of ashar shehizik adam. No, the Gemara says tamid lomer yasalo. Migufo mishalim veinu mishalim in aliyah, because when we talk about a shor tam and the unique chiyuvei nezikin of a shor tam, we subdivide that into two categories. Number one, nezek shalim versus of a muad versus chatzin nezek of a tam. Number two, min aliyah in the case of a shor muad and migufo in the case of a shor tam. And although Rabbi Akiva has this Ribui of Kemishpat to teach us that as far as the Tashlumen, the amount of the Tashlumen, just in dollars and cents, how much was the Nezek, evaluating the Nezek, we assume that the payment is going to be the full Nezek, based on this Ribui of Kemishpat, Hatachton, like that of Ashar Muad, Nezek Shalom. But as far as the basic nature of the Tashlumen, not the sum total, but the nature of the Tashlumen comes from the Guf Hashor, which means the Mazik is the payment. The payment is through the Shor Mazik. That's called Migufa. And that's derived from the Pasuk Ye'osa Lo. Lo is telling us Migufo Shel Shor Mishalim V'Eino Mishalim Min Aliyah. So we have here sort of a hybrid in the case of Shor Shenogach Adam, Shehizik Adam, according to Rabbi Akiva. It's a hybrid, it's a combination of two different elements. On the one hand, the element of Shor Muad to pay Nezek Shalom, and on the other hand, the element of Shor Tam that you pay Migufo, but not Min Ha'aliyah. Virabonon. What did Rabbanon do with Kemishpat Hazeh, Lomali? After all, the Zeh, according to Rabbi Akiva, is coming to limit this payment of Shor Shenogach Adam and the analogy to Muad to the payment of Nezek Shalim, but to exclusion of Min Haliyah. What does the Miud of Zeh tell me according to Rabbanon? And the Gemara answers, Lefotro Mi'arboa Dvarim, that a Shor Shenogach Adam pays Nezek, but he is exonerated, he's exempt from paying Tsar Ripui Sheves and Boshes. In other words, the halach of Chovel is limited to a human being who assaults a human being. It doesn't apply to a shor that attacks an Adam. And therefore, the shor pays nezek, chatzi nezek, but only for nezek and not for Sar, Ripui, Sheves, and Boshes. The Gemara explains, Nafkale min ve'ish ki yitain mumba miso. In other words, how do you know, minole, the Gemara asks, that this pasuk of Zeh is coming to exclude the four payments, the four categories of chovel, of chavola? And the Gemara answers, based on a pasuk in Vayikra Chavdalid, there the Torah says, ish ki yitain mum be'amiso. And what does that ish come to teach me? Ish ba'amiso pays arba dvarim, but lo shar ba'amiso. Shar ba'amiso does not pay arba dvarim. And this is according to Rabbi Akiva, because keep in mind, according to Rabbanon, the fact that Zeh is coming to exclude arba dvarim makes a lot of sense, because after all, here we're talking about dinim of a shar, and it makes sense. But once Rabbi Akiva equated the shar shehizik adam, even though he's a tam, with a muad, and the Torah was more machmir, you might have really seriously entertained the avamina that the dinim of chavola should kick in, and the shar tam should pay for arba dvarim, and the answer is ish, but not shar. V'rabbanan, why did the Rabbanan need the mir of Zeh to teach me that Shar, who is Chove Ba'adim, is exempt from paying Arba Dvarim? Why not derive it from the word Ish? And Gemara answers, Imeahi, if I only had the word Ish, I would have derived the conclusion of Amina, Tsar Lichudei, Aval Ripui, V'Sheves, Emol Litenlo. The Gemara now has a conceptual distinction within the four dvarim. It's not all mikshachas, one unified group. You can really divide and be machalik between two categories. The category of tsar, and for that matter you throw in boshes, with the category of ripui and sheves. Tsar is not a monetary punishment. And not a monetary compensation, because there's no loss of money over here. It's just tsar, it's anguish and pain. Same is true for boshes. But on the other end of the spectrum, we have ripui and sheves. That's a serious financial loss. And although you could derive the exclusion of dalid varm and the ptur, in the case of shor, shehizik, adam, from the word ish, but I might have logically limited that tour and that mute to the cases where there was no financial loss suffered by the victim, the human victim, of this attack from the Shah or the Caliph. And therefore, the Torah is only coming to say, you know what? In Sar and Boshes, which are payments of Embo, Chisaron, Kis, where there's no actual loss and there's no financial compensation that's necessary, the Torah was lenient in the case of a Shah. And the owner of the shor doesn't have to pay for nezik. But if we only have this one miut, I might have said that let's not go too far here in being lenient on the owner of the shor, shehizik adam, and let's assume that the laws of chavola kick in here, at least as far as financial loss is concerned. In the case of ripui, where now he has to pay out of pocket for doctor's expenses or hospital expenses. In the case of Sheves, he doesn't pay out of pocket, but he loses his salary because of the injury. It's kamash malon. That's why the pasuk has to teach me with this separate ribui of Zeh, the separate miud, I should say, of Zeh, to teach us kimishpat hazeh, that the shor does not pay in the case of negichas adam for dalid dvarim klal, even for those dvarim which represent financial loss, namely ripui and sheves. Complete, total ptur. The Mishnah goes ahead now and talks about a nezek that was created or generated by two equal partners. Shar hashoveh mona. Shenogach shar shoveh masayim. In this case, dinrim.
In other words, we've already established that in the case of a shar tam, the maximum payment is the value of the shar. That's called migufo. Above and beyond the market value of the shar, the mazik doesn't have to pay. Now, let's take the case of a shar tam that's worth mea dinrim. And the negicha, the nizak, had a shar that was worth 200 dinrim, twice that amount. And we're going to assume now, let's just isolate the value of the shvarim per se on the market live, because einan avelu yafek klum, let's say the carcass is worth nothing. And now the nizak obviously suffered a loss of 100 dinrim. I mean, the loss was actually more than that, but the maximum that you can demand from the mazik to pay is only the value of the shar. The shar mazik, and the shar mazik was only worth 100. That per se is not a chidush, but the Mishnah is mechadish notel es hashar, which means that the nizak doesn't have to wait to go to Bezdin, sue the mazik in court, wait till the dayanim decide based on the evidence that the mazik has to pay chatzi nezek, which is the equivalent of mea dinrim in this case, because the hezek was 200 zuz, then the nevela is not worth anything. You could circumvent that entire process, and that's called notel es hashar. The mazik could come and confiscate the shar, because the shar is worth mea dinrim, and that's exactly what the mazik has to pay. So instead of going to Bezdin and collecting 100 dinrim cash, the mazik can avail himself of, I'm sorry, the nizak can avail himself of this opportunity to just take the shar. The shar mazik is worth 100. Let him just confiscate the shar and set himself up, declare that he is the owner of that shar. And Gemara says this Mishnah reflects another sheet of Rabbi Akiva. I don't know if it's related at all to the previous Rabbi Akiva, who says that a shar tam shehizik adam pays nezik sholem, and he's being machmir, but here, I don't know, I think again it's a chumra against the mazik, or if you will, a kula on the nizak, licensing the nizak as it were, to confiscate the shar mazik. Masnisin mani, who's the author of the Mishnah? Rabbi Akiva, he, the sanya we learned in the Braisa. And the Braisa first quotes the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, and following that, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Char? The opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, Yusham Hashar Bebezdin, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that the Nizak doesn't have a right to confiscate the Shar. He has to go to Bezdin. Bezdin will evaluate the value of the Shar and convert the final bottom line of what the Mazik has to pay to the Nizak into dollars and cents. And the Mazik will pay with a check. Rabbi Akiva Omer Huchlat Hashar. Rabbi Akiva holds on the other hand, no. The Baal of the Shar Nizak has a right to confiscate the goof, the actual physical body of the Shar Mazik, if it's worth, again, Chatzi Nezek, and he becomes, in a sense, a part owner of the Shar. They now have two owners. And B'maiko Mifli, what's the argument about Rabbi Shmuel Sovar Kibal Chovu, that as a result of this Hezek, the Torah imposes a chiyuv, a liability to pay compensation to the nizak on the mazik, and the mazik has to pay in cold cash. Zuzehu demazikli. It's like anyone who borrows money, the baal chov has to pay in cash. You can't walk into the lover's property in his house and just confiscate, you know, his lampshades. Rabbi Akiva sovar shutfei ninhu. Rabbi Akiva says that as soon as the shor tam is nogeh, the shor of the nizak, the bala nizak becomes a shutaf, he becomes a partner in the owner of the shor hamazik, and therefore, whatever percentage, how do you know what percentage he owns here in this partnership? It all depends upon Chatzi Nezek. Whatever that Chatzi Nezek is, it translates into ownership on the part of the Mazik, on the goof, in the Nizak's ownership in the goof of the Shar HaMazik. Now, the Gemara is about to embark upon an analysis of this machlokas. What's the root of the machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel, that's Yusham Hashar, and Rabbi Kiva says Huchlat Hashar? And it all depends upon Kamifli Baikra, how to interpret the pasuk in the parasha of Shar Tam, Umachu es Hashar Achai, Vechatsu es Kaspo. What does that mean? They sell the Shar Achai. Rabbi Shmuel understands that Lebe Dina Kamazir Achmon of the Torah is addressing Bezdin and saying that Bezdin should determine how much the Shar is worth, and then they'll collect from the Mazik in cold cash Chatzi Nizak, Chatzi Nezek. So the Torah is telling Bezdin to, if need be, sell the Shar Mazik and split the money. But ultimately, what the Balashara Nisa gets in his pocket is money. Rabbi Kiva holds, L'nizak u'mazik mazil u'rachmona. The Torah is addressing itself to both the mazik and the nizak, because both the mazik and the nizak, as a result of the hezek, become partners, part owners in the guf ashar. Let them sell it and divide it up accordingly. My Beinayu, according to Rabbi Akiva, since Yuchlal Ashar and the owner of the Shar HaNizak now becomes a partner in the Shar Mazik, Higdisho Nizak Iker Beinayu, he, the Nizak, the Magdish, his partnership, his chilek of ownership in the Shar. Whereas according to Rabbi Shmuel, that's absolutely ridiculous. This Higdish cannot be Chal, the Nizak has no bailus or ownership, and therefore, in the Shor, and therefore no possibility of being Magdish the animal. So we're here now at the very, very tippy end of Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. We're up to Boy Minei at the very, very end. Boy Minei Rav Mir Rav Nachman of Daf, two lines up from the bottom of Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, and Amir Tz Hashem will continue that in the next shiur.